All around America, we're waiting for trains as the infrastructure is changing in the places we live in the United States in light of a deteriorating economy, changing fuel prices, climate, environmental issues. In the city of Denver, they're rethinking their infrastructure, and that's what we're focusing on all week. Denver, like many places in America, has grown from a small city to a sprawling metropolitan region. In our Waiting for the Train segment this morning, Andres Duwani joins us. He's an urban planner and co-author of Suburban Nation, The Rise of Sprawl, and The Decline of the American Dream. We want to talk about gentrification and how the shifting demographics of traditional gentrification work, particularly now as cities are trying to adjust to what he calls a more sustainable agenda.
Well, first of all, gentrification is a relatively new phenomenon, starting in the 50s when people decanted into the suburb as a result of the inadvertent result of federal policy. Cities lost value. They lost value tremendously. It was the great migration outwards. And what has happened is that as the suburban sprawl is progressively seen to fail, people are coming back in and bidding up the prices of basically the old inner city. And in most cities, the future investments and the current reality is that the inner city has a much better future than suburban sprawl, now, which is essentially unsustainable.
But that seems a little anecdotal in the sense that presumably the idea of where value is in a metropolitan community is suddenly changing because the suburbs are annoying, there are too many traffic jams, and, mm-hmm. and the old buildings in the city mm-hmm. are somehow more valuable and you can buy low and sell high, that sort mm-hmm. of market force. But how does gentrification become something much more associated with the kinds of social changes that are important to make cities more sustainable?
What gentrification is that the old, denser, walkable, mixed-use communities are becoming more desirable, and that's as a result of the baby boom generation, which, in fact, as we get older, this huge demographic bulge, as it gets older, cannot drive. You know, driving gets to be a chore and then dangerous, and you need to go back to a walkable environment. And then there are the kids, you know, the Generation Ys that actually grew up in the suburbs, for whom the suburb and the mall and all that, you know, the parking lots and all that stuff that may have excited their parents at one point holds no magic.
Right, they're trying to
and
get away
they
from
love
it.
Urbanism. They love urbanism. So you get basically the boomers and the, you know, the echo boomers wanting to go back into the city, the two largest demographic groups.
How do you avoid the socioeconomic problems where you've got upper-income individuals benefiting from gentrification and lower-income individuals being priced out of their own neighborhoods and that you have dislocations?
Well, those neighborhoods were originally quite valuable. We have to understand that they're actually what they're doing is recovering the value they once have. And you're taking a historicist point of view in which you say that basically the poor have a permanent right to the inner city, when in fact the inner city used to be mixed. They had both wealthy and poor people, and what you're getting now is that mix again. Now, how do you control it? It's very difficult to control. It's usually controlled by quality.
What do you mean controlled by quality?
Well, the better housing, the housing with the tall ceilings and the good light and the better materials become valuable, and the less good housing basically retains its lower value. The physical design is what determines value. But you can't make a beautiful house and prevent even the person who owns it currently from selling it for the highest value. A lot of the poor people themselves that are willingly selling the houses, and they're very pleased to do so if you ask them.
Well, how is
but the ideal is to keep everything mixed, to keep the diversity of incomes in the neighborhood.
Well, how has Denver managed that process? It has, as you've described, a central grid, a walkable neighborhood template, and at least the potential for a vastly improved quality of life in the center city.
Well, you know, Denver is, I think, very, very affected by the ideas of the new urbanism, and there are techniques that retain, not only deliver, but retain affordable housing. But I'll tell you, none of them are as powerful as the recent downturn that we've just experienced. I mean, if you want affordable housing, what the downturn has done, it has really lowered value tremendously. And there's no government policy that can do as well as a nice bust.
But how is that going to assist, you know, organizing communities in a planned sort of way, as opposed to being a windfall for individuals who are able to come in, buy low, and do exactly what they did before, sell high?
You know, it depends on how left or right you are. You know, some people think that the market should control that, and some people think the government should control it. Usually, you know, when it comes to urbanism, the best answer is always both. One does not have to decide. One basically says, in this condition, in fact, the private market delivers very efficiently, but it has this and that flaw. And given that circumstance, for example, government simply has to intervene because affordable housing is disappearing.
Before we go, can you give me one example of how this downturn is going to make it easier for you and the other new urbanists to actually accomplish your goals?
Oh, my. Yeah, you may not be expecting this answer, but for the first time in years, people have a chance to think. You know, our own office was incredibly busy. We could hardly think. Developers could hardly think. Bankers certainly couldn't think. And I think that one of the things I've noticed in the last year is that ideas have value because, you know, the old accumulated experience has virtually no value because it has proven so often to be wrong. And even when you were right, whatever you were right about is overbuilt.
Well,
you know?
So the issue is if you're simply trying to flip a property, you don't need an idea. You just need a transaction.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, one of the worst things that happened to the new urbanism in the last 5 years is that whatever was built sold anyway. So why do something that's more complex and intelligent?
That's a great point.
Boy, are those days over. Developers now have the time to sit down and discuss ideas. It's going to be a great renaissance in American development because you get some very bright people that now are forced to think. You know, it's not the old flatline response anymore. I'm very excited about, you know, the next decade or so as we see America, you know, the United States become engaged in full-fledged reform at every level.
And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife.